jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Let's get crazy. Welcome to the Round 16 Supercoach Coach Podcast. I'm Marcus and I'm joined this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. Pretty good week of footy with the Bombers winning against the Giants with some last-minute heroics. I'm excited to be here for that reason.
Yep, and there were a few other finals contenders that dropped games as well, so very, very
interesting. Yeah, there was. Yeah. I was barracking pretty hard for Carlton at the end.
Yeah.
Never done that before, I don't think.
I reckon outside of Geelong and Essendon, quite a few of the other top eight members lost over the weekend. So, yeah, certainly an interesting week for finals considerations, looking at sort of that 6th to 10th spot. Certainly going to be an exciting run to September as it was last year, Mark. So I know you're very much looking forward to that.
Yeah, good to be a little bit part of that.
Yeah, well, you can tell we've spent a minute and we're avoiding talking Supercoach for a very good reason. That's good.
Can we talk about other stuff for the whole show, or is that sort of not doing the right thing?
Look, I didn't end up having a terrible week. I treaded water for the week, but it's just when you look at your team and you don't have a finished team and there's still duds on field and then there's more injuries, it's a little bit depressing. But let's go around with a personal update and then we'll get some cheerier topics, mostly being around trading and what you can do to fix the shit. I scored 22.39 for the weekend and that put me up 21 spots, so basically in the same spot, ranked about the 9,000 mark. Yeah, uninspiring trades. I brought in Sloan, which felt fairly cookie cutter. At least he scored 129. Bontempelli was my close second. He scored 130. I still don't know if that was the right choice, especially because Sloan's more injury prone. So I'm hoping Sloan can really bring it home strongly and at least stay injury free for the next few rounds.
We're watching the Port Adelaide Bulldogs game.
Oh, he had a monster first three quarters.
80 at quarter time, he would have been scaring you a little bit.
All right, I tried not to look. How'd your weekend go, Mark?
I guess, look, okay, I had Rockliffe and Cripps out. I guess everyone had Cripps out, but that just means that there's two rookie scores on field again. Seem to have been carrying an injured premium at least every week since about round 6 or 7. Just makes it hard to get going. And just a whole bunch of premiums didn't score over 100, which is kind of a bit crap. But went up about 1,000 spots in the rankings, still sitting about 18,000th in the rankings. So still way back with a crap team and no trades.
Yeah, we're just trying to put up a respectable end-of-year score. Like, I don't think I've finished outside of the 4,000 mark in the last 10 years since doing this podcast. So that's my aim, Mark. 5,000, I'll be very, very happy by the end of the season. So
I think last year was my first time outside the first 5,000, and there could be back-to-back years. So I might need to put in a bit of a better preseason next year.
Yep. Don't know. Maybe you're tanking for draft picks or something, Mark. I'm feeling the same way anyway. All right, let's get on to group update and a bit happier news. Michael's team break a leg. Is leading our public group. He dropped down a little bit, but still sitting at 19th. And our Patreon group is being led by Matthew's team, the best 22. He moved in from 152nd to 80th over the weekend. So congrats to him.
Massive.
In terms of top score for our Patreon group for the week, that was Andrew's team, Selwood United, with 2480. So huge score. Unfortunately, it doesn't beat the 2500 plus score that we had in about round 5 or so. So he's hasn't overtaken the mantle for top score for the year. And that's still up for grabs until the remainder of the year. So Aussie Divers Phuket, I think his score of 2527 has held strong for a very long time. But you think
surely we'll beat that on the run home, though, with full upgraded teams.
That's it. So an exciting finish potentially there with a few coaches with upgraded teams hoping to take that $100 prize and some merch out. All right, Mark, on to some questions, and we'll start off with a general trade question this week. And this one's from at 1594 Beast on Twitter. How many trades is best to have left for teams? And he's wanting us to take into account the league. So considering sort of finals and those sorts of generally a little bit more conservative with trades if you're going for leagues, Mark. And I think now with 8 rounds to go, it's a good time to consider that. Do you have any general advice for how to deal with trades, Mark, for leagues?
Realistically, the best strategy would be to go into the finals with four trades, I reckon. So one for each week of the finals, just so you're not having to sit premiums on the bench if you can avoid that with short-term injuries, and you can cover any dramas that come up. Having four trades left and making finals is, I'm in some very competitive cash leagues, and you're just not going to be able to get to the finals with four trades still left. So I guess you just try and hold two and hope to get lucky over those 4 weeks. The best amount of trades to have left is as many as possible, really.
Yep, definitely agree with that. You're looking at the balance of how far outside the eight or sort of comfortably in the eight are you, and therefore how sort of much do you have to push the pedal down in order to secure that final spot. All this held trades are absolutely for naught, and I guess it goes without saying if you don't make finals. So, but apart from that, I think four is pretty sensible. Like you said, Mark, I guess eight would be ideal, two for every week, but you get diminishing returns to a certain extent by holding more trades that late in the season. So you want to consider putting yourself in a good position for the finals as well, not just trying to hold trades.
I've definitely held two off to a grand final week before, and it's won me grand finals. But realistically, if you're sitting ninth or 10th on the ladder, like, and leagues is all you care about, then go down to zero. You just got to make the finals. You can't win if you don't make them.
All right, Mark, we'll move on to the next question. And we're now getting into a few injured players. And unfortunately, that's going to occupy a majority of our episode for the week.
The list is long.
I will start off with David Trin's question from Facebook. And he's asking about these potential injuries in brackets, especially if you're facing them with limited or no cover. Now, he's listed four names here, and I think that they are the four that are top of mind at the moment. So you've got Caleb Daniels, Patrick Dangerfield, Patrick Cripps, and Maxi Gawn. And we'll go through them one by one, but I wanted to start on Paddy Dangerfield. He's the one out of the four that's played through the game and seems like the most likely to potentially suit up again this week.
Is he faking another injury?
Yeah. I think Kane Corns may have come out and slagged him off again. So maybe that'll spurn Dangerfield to show him what's what and play this week. Maybe. I'll take anything.
I just watched another replay of that. incident. He didn't get hit that hard.
Right on the hit pointer. So it's one of those corky type injuries that he probably got a jab for down in the rooms.
My wife looked at me and said, if that happened to you, you would either be dead or on your way to hospital in an ambulance. And I do agree with that.
Yeah, go Mel. What do you reckon, Mark? I mean, with Paddy, he's that sort of super unique player where his scoring potential in the forward line is not necessarily something you want to forfeit. You know, Paddy and Geelong still have a reasonable run to come. He still played out last week's game, so even if he misses one, you wouldn't think he misses more. It doesn't look like an injury with a structural issue, so yeah. It's not like a hamstring or something where you know, he could re-injure it. I'm thinking he's a hold. What do you reckon, Mark?
Yeah, I think he's also a hold. I guess that Geelong probably pretty tempted to just give him a break this week as soon as they're in a pretty good ladder position. With a good overall draw on the way home. They play the Doggies, which could be a tricky match. It's on Saturday night, I think. But, yeah, like, I mean, if he misses 1 week, you've just got to hold Dangerfield at this stage, I think.
How about Patrick Cripps, mate? Our patron Aurelius Maximus asked about him and whether or not we had any updates on his injury. He was listed as 1-2 last week. You reckon he's coming back this week? Have you heard any whispers?
I haven't heard anything, mate. We are recording this on a Monday, so the injury list is not out yet. And I guess if he's out for two and you've already held him for 50% of that time, you'd probably hold him for the rest of the time. And he's such a gun with a high scoring ceiling, it's pretty hard to trade him out.
It almost feels like they were playing him for a little bit with some sort of niggling injury that they finally had to succumb and give him a bit of a rest. So I guess that's going to be a little bit dependent on how he's pulled up after the week and might be speculating a bit as to whether or not he actually gets back. But, you know, again, it doesn't seem like one of those where he's actually structurally damaged the tissue. So if he comes back after having a bit of rest, you'd assume that he can continue to score pretty well on the run home.
It did seem just a bit odd, like they had the bye, no news about Cripps' injury, and then it gets to team sheets and all of a sudden you hear about it.
Yeah. Like I'd only heard through Carlton supporters who obviously follow him a little bit closer that they reckon he's held that for a little bit, and maybe that's why they didn't feel a need to explain anything, is that I guess when you're holding an injury like that and getting a player to play sore, you tend not to reveal information if you can to opposition. So maybe that's part of it.
He did have probably, what, four down weeks where his scoring was like significantly down, but then sort of in the middle of that he had the 190-plus where he won them the game.
Well, I mean, he's basically had to play from the bottom of the pack for the entirety of the year. So it's, if anything, a good effort that he's lasted this long. But again, another one in that camp where you'd hold ideally if you have cover.
So I guess that the question really with those two guys is like their obvious holds, their short-term injuries based on what we know. Would you trade either if you were facing a donut? What sort of situation do you have to be in there?
That's a pretty good question. And normally I would say to maximize points on field, you trade the premium out so you get a premium score on field. That makes sense, right? But if you're looking at donuts, as soon as you've had one injury on field, like you literally have no bench cover at all, then do you consider potentially trading in bench cover so that at least, you know, if you get injuries moving forward, you're not faced with this one and out scenario that a lot of us, I know myself included, I'm facing it where if I don't shore up my bench, I just keep trading out these primos. If they, one misses 3 weeks down the track, I'm going to be facing the same scenario. So I wonder if you're at a point where your bench is pushed so light, do you trade in a rookie instead of a premium, Mark?
Interesting call. I guess it really depends on your situation. And the tricky part is, are you just going to be trading in another rookie that's going to be dropped in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, unfortunately, a few of the more decent rookies have cleared over the last few weeks. I think, you know, even Haitley got a game recently. Obviously, job security not great there, but you had Dylan Clark come through, you had Griffin Logue come through. We've not had the most options to consider anyway, but certainly looking at the fresh debutants, you're probably right there, Mark, in the sense that I'm not sure I have great confidence in going early on anyone. And when we go through the rookies later on the show, I think that really resonates. So might be a good reason to potentially trade for another premium. How many trades would you need to have to cop a donut instead of just doing the side swap, Mark, if you're facing a donut?
Five or less, I guess.
Mm.
The pressure starts coming when you got five or less.
Yeah, I would be quite tempted to continue trading until you had, maybe even four or less, I think.
Okay.
If faced with a donut. I mean, if you can bring in a premium that spikes a 120 score the week that you bring him in, like that's a pretty good amount of points to be able to get this late in the season.
It's tricky, Cole, just because I just reckon that when you're facing a donut seems really significant, but after you've been through it, you kind of just forget about it and move on, and you're really glad you've still got that trade in the bank.
Yeah.
Getting one player's replacement score is very rarely worth it.
Yeah. Late in the season, you can get to a point where you've got two or three, or that donut's going to last for multiple weeks. So that is a fair call out, Mark.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get to another guy who is a lot trickier in terms of perhaps having to swallow a donut. And at ImbecileSC on Twitter has asked about our thresholds for trading Maxi Gawn. So he went down on 9 points.
He went down hard. Yeah,
basically came down from a ruck contest, landing on an ankle that twisted as he put his full body weight through it. He rolled off it pretty quickly, so it didn't look like he smashed too much weight on it for too long, but still, you would assume a little bit of ligament tears at the very least.
Apparently nothing.
He came back on field, which is a little bit surprising, but
the scans came back clear, just a sprain.
Just a sprain, okay. There's still talk that he misses this week, potentially, though, Mark.
It wouldn't be a fun sprain. I don't know whether you've ever sprained your ankle like that before, but it would be very swollen and black and blue, and you wouldn't want to put a lot of pressure through it.
So what do you reckon, mate? Like, if he misses this week, is this one of the scenarios where you willingly swallow a donut?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Well, I think the thing that changes the equation in the ruck line is it's harder to stump up for cover because you only have one position on field. They're not great ruck forwards this year, except for Lysette, who's already at 580K.
Marshall's ruck forward, isn't he, or is Marshall just forward?
I think Marshall's just forward, unfortunately.
Bullshit.
Yep. If Marshall was ruck forward, I would have hoped we recommended him and he'd be in our teams already. But sadly, he's not. And the other option is to have rookie cover instead. I suppose anyone who might still have Riley O'Brien, you'd be pretty happy, but I highly, highly doubt anyone's running Riley O'Brien on R3 still. You've got Darcy Fort, is that right, Mark?
Yeah, it's bloody great having Darcy Fort with Radaglia still injured and Geelong going to a different ruck model that doesn't include Darcy Fort. Bloody great.
I reckon there's a chance, a slight chance, if Sav isn't still back up and from a matchup point of view, they want to play a second ruck who can play up forward, that Fort comes back in. Because they didn't drop him for another tall. They actually dropped him for a small this week. So they changed the way our team is structured up. And Sav...
After a loss, turned into a win. So that's my concern.
I don't know that we're necessarily sold on this structure for the remainder of the year. I totally expect a second ruck forward to play in Geelong's structure sooner rather than later. So it's just whether or not Sav comes back in or Fort, or they hold off for another week if Sav's not.
Well, if Fort played this week, that'd be bloody fantastic. Because I think my option other than that is, like, it's just so hard to match Gawn, right? Like, I guess Lysette is going really, really well, but who would you possibly trade Gawn to that you'd be happy with? And Gawn will probably get all those points back over the course of the year.
Yeah. I think if I were to trade Gawn, it would be to look on it as an opportunity to potentially gain some cash. So he's at 690K. His break-even's 212. In 2 weeks, he can drop about 70K, and then he could go straight back up. His scoring potential is that good. But even if he scores 130 and 130 the next 2 weeks, he still drops like 70K. So you could look at that as potentially a cash injection, get him out, trade him to, like, I'd probably only trade him to a ruck forward so that you have additional options for trading Gawn back in if you needed to, and then potentially looking at trading back him back in. Now, obviously, not everyone's going to be in that scenario.
Damn, you got a lot of trades left.
Not everyone's going to be in that scenario. But on Facebook today, I posted sort of a trade check, and there are a few people in our community that do have quite a few trades. And I know people who play for the leagues or play in less competitive leagues may not accelerate through their trades as quickly as we do. And so if you're in that sort of scenario, that's something that you could consider. For a traditional overall chaser, it'd be a pretty tough scenario to trade Gawn out and then back in. I would certainly be looking at Lysette if I was looking to trade Gawn out, though, that's for sure. And we did get a question about Lysette and his ability to cover. Alex Hua, one of our patrons, asks whether or not he should be a priority this week given not only his ability to cover this week but also heading into the Supercoach finals.
So is this aside from Gawn, like you're thinking of trading him in even and keeping Gawn potentially? Really hard to pay 570 for a guy that was 420 2 weeks ago. I just think that, like, even if you're trading out Gawn, you're taking a huge, huge risk. It's just that there's nobody else that I'd be comfortable to go to with that trade and ride the rest of the season home. So I'm just happy just to cut the donut. I think that I'd be looking sort of that backdoor way of fixing it. So whether it's bringing in a ruck forward, like I said, into the forward line, if you've got Barnes there to switch with, or some sort of way of getting cover onto your bench potentially.
Now, there is one ruck rookie who's on the bubble this week and was an in last week playing for Port Adelaide, Peter Laddams. What do you reckon about him, mate? There's a good chance he gets dropped because Ryder had a big game, Westhoff had a big game, and Port Adelaide lost on the weekend. But if he gets named, would you consider maybe some side swapping around the rucks to bring in him in? He scored 79 on the weekend and in the 60s in his first game.
And 79, realistically, is a massive score in that wet. Like, would have been a very, very tough game for a big guy to come in. And a second ruck, you often see him score 20s and 30s in games like that. So that's a really big score, and he has been playing well this year. My concern would be that he came in and Port Adelaide lost. So maybe they think they haven't quite got that balance right, and he may go out for Westhoff this week. So, and I think that him going out of the team would always be a pretty surprise on cover, sort of be like a 1 week thing, and he might only get you 50 or 60 points. So, from that perspective, I probably wouldn't go there. I think that the other player to consider would be Zach Clark, with Bell Chambers going down for the next 6 or so weeks. So I'm not sure whether we actually play Zach Clark, but he did sit out the last quarter in the VFL, so I think we probably have to. And McKernan is just that bit undersized to actually ruck an entire game by himself. So with Bell Chambers out for a bit longer and Essendon not having another option to go to, Zach Clark maybe interests me a little bit more than Laddams.
Clark has previously scored like 90-ish, playing like more time in the ruck at Freo.
Yeah, I wouldn't get too excited though, mate. He's been bloody dreadful when he's come into the AFL so far this year.
But he's come in as like a pinch-hitting ruck 20% of the time. Like he's played McKernan's role.
Yeah, and a lot of the mistakes he's made have been as a forward where he just can't kick straight.
So it's a predominant ruck. Like it's a bit more similar to the Lysette scenario or the even Marshall scenario. Like if you look at the rucks in the AFL, there's only two real standout rucks. They're not that many more playing pure solo ruck. And the ones that do actually score all right, I guess Gorn to Zach Clark, could that be a cheeky price? Like, you get a lot of cash from that.
That'll make me vomit in my mouth, man.
It's 500K. I'm not sure that you could upgrade two shit rookies to full premiums.
I'm not sure that he'll play sole ruck. Like, I think that he'll rotate pretty heavily with McKernan. And so it won't, like, there's two big guys in the team. It's not like last set with Dixon playing forward, like Dixon just doing 10% of the ruck. So I think I'd say McKernan would probably do a little bit more than that. And yeah, Clark would have to be pulling something out from nowhere.
All right, just to wrap it up.
What do you reckon? You want to do it?
Nah, I won't. I mean, I'm looking at the 500K cash injection, my terrible team, and go, this looks okay. But in reality, it's too high a risk to take. I think to wrap it up, I would say very much okay with taking a ruck donut for a single week. The injury news that it's come back, the scans, clearing him of structural damage is great news. If you have the trade flexibility or the cash flexibility to bring in Lysette, yes, he has gone up 150K in 2 weeks, but 570 is not egregious if he can keep this up and offer ruck forward flexibility as potential cover for the remainder of the year. So if you are in the scenario where that is an option, that's not too bad either. I think we're both cautioning against trading your ruck rookies to get cover from a rookie for just 1 week, though. That sounds less worth it than just copying the lost score for a week. All right, next question is again from Aurelius Maximus about Caleb Daniel. He's out, so now it seems like 3 to 4 with a hamstring. So that news only came out Monday afternoon. The question he has asked is trade or hold? I am actually leaning toward trade. 3 to 4 with only 8 weeks left to go. That's potentially half of the remaining rounds. That seems like a good opportunity to use a trade to me. What do you reckon, Mark?
Yeah, I lean towards trading as well. He's a decent price of $532,000. You could pick up a good alternative there. You could maybe even use it as part of your Gorn replacement strategy. But yeah, I think that if knowing 3 to 4 weeks in advance is a trade, I wish I had known that about Matt Crouch and Rockliffe, who have both just cost me a bunch of points this year from holding them for their continuous one-week injuries.
Yeah, those one-weekers are terrible, terrible things to see on an injury list because you know there's a bit of mistruth there and they just didn't want to put down the worst case scenario and our super coaches are left holding the bathwater. With Caleb Daniel, at least his price point isn't too bad. He's 532K, which does open up your options a fair bit. Had a decent stretch before running into that injury with 4 tons, I think, prior to that Port Adelaide game. Why don't we maybe list out our top options in the forward line or maybe even sort of the top six options, Mark? We haven't sort of predicted a top six forward, so maybe if we do that and our listeners can pick which of the six they don't have, or do you want to approach it a different way? What do you reckon?
Sure, if you want to, yeah.
Cool. I might go first. So I think the four that are most locked away for me are Boak, Dangerfield, Dunkley, and Kelly. And then after that, I'm sad to say, but I'm going to include Rowan Marshall there. He's still playing solo ruck, and he's averaging 109 now. So he, unfortunately, is in there. The true number six is actually Michael Walters before Daniel at 7. If I were to have to pick a player, I'm not necessarily sure that I would pick him as my number six. All right, I'm going to go for David Mundy. Now, less as a definite top six option, but more as I think he's a decent chance to slip into the top six. And he's currently priced at 430K after a cold month. So I think at that price point and with his scoring potential, he rounds out my top six options. What do you reckon, Mark?
So I would have same top five. I think Lysette probably slips into number six pretty easily there. So Dangerfield, Boak, Dunkley, and Kelly, and the two Ruckman, Marshall, and Lysette. And I think that if I had to pick a seventh player, it'd be Jack Siebel, who has a three-round average of 110 and has just looked great since the new coach came on board.
Yeah, it looks like they're not really going to play him up forward now that they've returned to some success having him run that midfield. So I don't mind that one at all. If you're looking for another sneaky, cheaper option, Tom Hawkins, he has scored 24 following that Port Adelaide game. So his average has come way down. He was still averaging 98 prior to that game and almost keeping up last year's average. They've still got a pretty decent run home: Western Bulldogs, St Kilda, Hawthorne, Sydney, Frio, North, Brisbane, and Carlton. So he's a little smoky key position four that you might think about as well.
They're keeping 161, so it'll be a lot cheaper next week.
Yep. That's a good call as well, Mark. All right. Any other forwards you want to touch on or throw out as potential trade-ins, Mark, before we move into the next question? Or are you?
No, I think that's pretty good, mate. I think that covers sort of the most enough players that people won't actually have in their teams that present okay prices. Mm.
All right, let's move to a quick rookie chat then. This one's from Steve McKenzie from Facebook. He's asking about Choll's job security going forward. Can you see him playing out the season? And I think as an answer to that question, direct answer, somebody said he's getting dropped as soon as Riewoldt's fit and back in. Do you echo those thoughts, Mark?
A little bit hard to predict. He did have a really good game on the weekend, but I do think that their preferred lineup is the way that they started the year, which I guess they didn't start the way this year because Bolter was in, but Riewoldt, Lynch doing a little bit of ruck work and Nankervis in the ruck is, I think, that their preferred structure. And I think adding Choll to that might be a little bit of overkill, but they did play Bolter through most of the first half of the year. So I'm not totally convinced that that's the way it's going to go. He's only played two games. It's really hard to rely on him. His first game wasn't that flash as well.
Jack Riewoldt is still 2 to 3 away on last week's injury list.
Yeah, they said sneaky chance for this week. Hardwick said that he's convinced. He just needs the medicos to be convinced.
I think also probably should consider the fact that Bolter could also unseat Choll as well if he has a couple of good games in the VFL. So just something to think about. If you need a downgrade target, 102K is probably his biggest draw card.
He's probably realistically not a lot of other options available this week. So he's not a terrible in as well. He's named this week, like, he is someone that may be better than a lot of the other players out there. I've got Gardner in my team, and he doesn't look like coming back anytime soon.
No, not that Shacky's coming back and kicking three goals a game. Damn it.
Yeah.
All right, how about Jared Cameron, mate? We didn't get a question about him, but he's actually on the bubble. Not only that, he's mid-forward. Not only that, plays for West Coast, which has a few cheeky Sunday games. If 117K, he does seem like the standout trade-in target for the week. Last week, I was a little bit worried he'd be straight out for Willie Rioli. But fortunately for people brought him in early, including Faz, Petrocelli did his hamstring and he's managed to keep his spot. You think that continues, Mark?
So the trade-in target of the week scored 26 on the weekend. Is that right?
Rookie trade-in target for the week. I mean, we're scraping a barrel here. That's pretty bare.
Yeah, I'm not. So you have him rated above Choll, who scores a 102K price rookie, who scored over 100.
I think that from a job security lens, it's better because Petrocelli's out for an extended period. Is it 4 to 6?
I thought it was maybe 3 to 4. I think if it's... If you look at the injury list tomorrow and it says 4 to 6, then Cameron is a much, much better selection. If it's 3 to 4, which was the original thing that I read, then like already one of those has been served and Petrocelli's been great this year, so he will be straight back in. So Cameron may not be around for too much longer as well. He looked great in week one, just struggled with traveling.
He also has the mid-forward flexibility, and there's not a lot of rookies that have come up in the second half of the year with that mid-forward flexibility. So if you wanted to do a pivot with a seventh forward as an example, or even as your last midfield spot, he also opens up that flexibility.
Okay, yep.
I guess I'm very much not sold on Chol's job security, so I guess maybe I should just include that to colour sort of my evaluation of Cameron, less that I have a ringing endorsement of Cameron, but more I'm not confident at all on Chol.
So I don't have a ringing endorsement of Cameron at all, like 6 disposals, 2 tackles, no goals, no behinds on the weekend in the wet. Like, that should be his game. I know Hawthorn was sort of like in front for a decent amount of that game, but I would have expected him to perform a bit better that week. And so I just think that, like you said, like, there's not a lot of options this week. And so you may just, if you still need a downgrade, you may just have to take someone like a Jared Cameron and hope for the best.
All right, Mark, let's move to overrated, underrated now. We've got this week's submission from Greg Fleming, one of our patrons. And he's asking about Hamish Hartlett as a trade-in option. Now, he's not been too widely touted so far in fantasy circles as a trade-in, but after a 130 on the weekend, that will certainly get tongues wagging a little bit more. He took quite a few intercept marks in the back line in the wet. I don't know if the conditions played to him at all, but he certainly had one of the better games I've seen in a little while from him, and that's good to see coming back from an injury. Unfortunately, he was on the bubble, so he's gone up a little bit in price. He's now priced at 384K. So still cheap, but not peanuts. Do you reckon he's worth considering, Mark? How do you have him in the overrated, underrated stakes?
Look, I think that at his price, if you're really desperate for a cheap defender, you could do worse. I think that he'll still average below 100. Awesome. He played an absolutely brilliant game against the Doggies. I was super impressed, but I don't think you can read much out of that game. It was just, I haven't seen a game like that for as long as I can remember. You could barely see the ball and the players through the lane.
It was insane.
The noise was even crazy, how loud it was. Like, it was... yeah, just crazy conditions.
I think at one point it got from bad to worse, and you could physically, like, and sometimes on the TV they somehow like mix out the rain droplets, like you can't tell too much. Yeah, it got to a point though where you were just like, oh my god, what is that? It's like white streaks, and they've gone like, oh yeah, it's progressed from rain. I'm pretty sure it's hailing down there now.
Yeah,
it was insane.
Yeah, I don't think you can read a lot from that game. He was super. Better than I've seen Hartlett play for a really long time, like 4 or 5 years. Mm. So for Port, they'd bloody hope that he can keep that up. So I'm not sold that he's going to average over 100. So he doesn't have a great durability history either. Yeah. So he hasn't played 22 games since 2015, and that was the only time in his whole career that he has. So yeah, I'd have my doubts on Hartlett, but at 387... every player at that price is going to have doubts on, I think. So it's just about gambling and what sort of risk profile you're willing to take on.
Yeah. I would have been much more comfortable taking him before the price increase than after. If you're still looking for someone, then just keep in mind the injury risk. That's just the biggest call out. Like, I don't think he's a bad risk to take, but you're accepting an injury risk. Anytime you make a mid-season trade where you're trading in a guy who's come off an injury-interrupted season or is returning from injury or is injury-prone, you just need to recognize that. Similarly with Sloan last week, just factor that in when you're trading in Hamish Hartlett. If you've got like 3, 4, 5 trades left after trading him in, he's definitely not one to take the risk on. For those who have a fair bit more, maybe you might consider him. All right, Mark, let's do some captaincy options and then wrap up the show. I've done a little bit of research, so I'm going to start with my options, Mark, and then throw across to yourself. So for my vice captaincy options this week, I'm going to tout Fife against West Coast. He really, really loves playing West Coast. He's played 15 career games against them, 12 of those 15 have delivered 100-plus points, and he averages, I think, 109 over his career against West Coast. So very, very, very much likes to play against them. If you've got Zach Merritt against Sydney, his last four against them, 104, 141, 114, and they've actually already played this year, Mark, and you'd probably remember this. Merritt scored 129 against Sydney, so he's my second top option for VC this week. My top VC option is Sloan against Port Adelaide. Last four include three above 138, so 168, 151, 111, and this year they've already played. He scored 138. In terms of captaincy options, my top three start with Oliver against Carlton, 139, 116, 88, his last three against them. Then second best, Kelly against Brisbane. He scored 149 against the Lions last year. And then my top option as a backup captaincy, Neil against GWS. His last five against them, 110, 124, 154, 117, and 85. So pretty good consistency there against the Giants, including...
And no DeBoer.
Yes, and no DeBoer as well, Mark. What do you reckon are those options, Mark? You like the Merritt suggestion there?
No. I reckon that they... I think Hewitt went to Shield last time. Hewitt might go to Merritt this time, just with Shield having coming off an injury. Potentially, and Essendon did pretty well in that game. That was post-gate, if you remember that game. My theory is that the highest averaging player in my team is Brody Grundy, and he plays on Friday night, and he scores pretty well at the MCG. I don't have the numbers in front of me like you do, mate, but I do know that he scores amazingly at the MCG, so probably just lock that in and don't even worry about checking my team for the rest of the weekend. But if I did, I did like those Fife numbers, and Fife is a backup captain. He seems pretty reliable when you do it in Perth.
Grundy definitely loves playing at the MCG, Mark, so that's a very good call out. In fact, he's had seven scores 124 plus there out of the nine he's played so far this year. That's huge. 124 plus, seven out of the nine.
And what were the other two?
84, 81.
Oh, wow, that's not good.
But still some big scores. The reason why he didn't quite make my cutoff, and it's just the call out, is Hawthorne and Ben McAvoy actually do reasonably okay with stopping opposition rucks from scoring. And that's just because McAvoy is decent at contested marking situation, and he's pretty good in the ruck as well, even though he doesn't score a heap of Supercoach points himself. And his last four against, well, his career high against Hawthorn is 109. His second best is 105. And those are his only two out of six scores against Hawthorn where he's hit the ton. Doesn't have the best record against them, but loves playing at the G. So as a VC option, not too bad. I probably wouldn't run the captain gauntlet on him, though.
Probably wouldn't do that on a Friday night, you're right.
The sound advice, Mark, sound. anything else you want to leave our listeners with, Mark, before we wrap up for the week?
No, I think I'm good, mate. I just really hope some of these guys get up. And I guess it looks like I'm going to be playing at least one premium down again this week. Maybe I'll never get a fully premium side out of the park.
I'm two away from that, mate. So join the club. And to the rest of you, good luck, and we'll catch you next week. See ya.
Yeah.
Don't make it crazy. Don't make it crazy. Don't make it crazy.